Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hello, everyone. Today we have with us Fran. Fran is a leadership coach, and she is managing several businesses, and she's been very kind to accept my invitation of being with us today, because working in leadership, she often encounters one specific problem that is very important for women in business to address, to be aware of and address. We go that into that more in details later, but first of all, hi, Fran.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate your time, Julia. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And can you give us a little bit of your background and tell us where you come from, what you're doing, etc.?
Sure. Yeah. So I sometimes describe myself as a recovering chief exec. So, up until about 2 years ago, I was the chief exec of a housing and homelessness nonprofit here in England. I was in that sector for about 20 years, and I was running the organization for about 4 or 5 years. And I guess I kind of got to the point where it was making me very unwell physically and mentally, because it was so stressful, and also because of the issues around imposter syndrome that I'm going to talk about. And so I took the decision to set up my own business, which has since become 3 businesses, and get out of that kind of stressful environment. So now I do leadership coaching, and I support kind of leaders and emerging leaders to be, you know, the best they can be. And I'm also the founder of another consultancy firm and a tech for good startup. So in many ways, I'm working more than I was when I was this chief exec, but I'm far less stressed and so much happier. So yeah, that's a whistle stop tour of where I've come from.
And if I remember correctly, you actually chose a very interesting time to make your transition, like the best time. You know, you couldn't have planned it better.
Awful timing. I resigned in February 2020, about a week before the pandemic really took hold and they announced the national lockdown. So I had to work a 3-month notice period. And I immediately contacted my board and said, oh my God, I made a huge mistake. And I got my notice. But actually, you know, it was fine. I knew I was making the right decision deep down, and almost immediately from the point that I resigned, I was fully booked from the day that I left, because, you know, I was going through the national pandemic, but so was everybody else, and all these other organizations were sort of suddenly thrust into this situation where they didn't know what to do or how to handle it. And I was working with, you know, lots of organizations around resilience and sustainability, but also lots of chief execs and directors who were just thrust into this situation of complete chaos and not knowing which way was up and trying to navigate that, managing their own health and well-being, their families, and working from home and supporting their, you know, their organization, their teams to remain sustainable and remain safe and well, and also working with their boards who were trying to be very helpful but often were causing more of a hindrance than a help.
Oh. And so exactly, so what this is what you do, you really help people that need to navigate situations that might not be straightforward, if you want. And when you and I got the chance to talk for business, you specifically mentioned the problem of the imposter syndrome. Now, this is a very interesting topic for me, because when we tackle the challenges that women face in business, women entrepreneurs or women in career, a lot of the obstacles come from outside. So there are obstacles that are put in our way as we try to reach our goals. However, because of a series of reasons, external or internal, we often create some obstacles or face some obstacle that comes from within ourselves. Now, this is not only a female problem. We're going to talk about that in a second, but it's something that we see more and more in women. So can you tell us a bit more, for those people that are maybe not so familiar with the concept of the imposter syndrome, can you tell us a bit more what it is and how it affects people that otherwise could be absolutely, you know, shining stars?
Absolutely. I would describe imposter syndrome as that feeling that you get, and we all get it, of feeling like you're probably not the right person for the job, or that somebody could be doing this better than you, or that you're not really sure why they've recruited you to do this job, and it's all a big, you know, it's all a big facade, and at some point they're going to find out that you're not up to the job. It's this kind of niggling doubt that sits at the back of your mind and makes you feel that you're probably not good enough. And I don't think I've ever come across anybody who, apart from possibly narcissists and maybe psychopaths, I don't think I've ever come across anybody who hasn't got imposter syndrome to at least some degree, that kind of niggling sense of, you know, should I really be doing this? Am I really the best person to be doing this? But many people have it, you know, to the point where it becomes debilitating, or to the point where it becomes, you know, an absolute hindrance, to be honest, in them not being able to fulfill their potential. And that's the thing that makes me, you know, I just want to scream, because I see people all the time who have got such great ideas and so much potential, and could be incredible leaders, but they just can't get past themselves. That's it's their own internal barrier that's the problem.
And this is, as you say, a lot, almost everyone at some point experienced it. I remember the first time I experienced it, it's exactly that. Sooner or later, someone will bust me. They will know that I'm not that good. It was the biggest promotion I had when I was younger. And I was like, oh. And I remember my husband saying, well, if they chose you, there is a reason. Like, it's not that they chose you. They're not crazy people that they want to throw away their business. But I remember that sensation, and he stayed with me for a long time, I think, in that role. But as you said, it's not affecting only women, except that women seem to be more susceptible to that. Would you find that in your experience? And do you know why?
Yeah, I think there's some data that sort of suggests that men are more confident about applying for jobs, for example, when they meet less of the person specification than women. Women will wait until they can demonstrate everything on the person spec. So I guess to a certain extent that's about confidence, but I think a lot of it comes from your upbringing, you know, whether you've had that kind of privileged upbringing where you felt that you can do the things that you want to do in the world and achieve the things that you want to achieve. So some of that comes from, you know, the confidence that's been instilled in you as you've been growing up. I do see it all the time in women. I see it, you know, really frequently in women. And I think women have a kind of innate, almost like a defense mechanism, because we know, you know, inevitably at every step of the journey, we're going to face external barriers. And so sometimes I think we start to believe that as truth. You know, we start to believe that those external barriers may have an element of truth about them. Maybe there's a reason that, you know, that we find it so hard to get to the top. Maybe there's a reason that, you know, we aren't able to get back on the career ladder as easily once we've had kids, or all of those things. And, you know, if somebody tells you this stuff often enough, you do start to doubt yourself at the back of your mind. So I think there's some of that. We do have, I mean, from personal experience, I think we do have to work much harder for people to take us seriously and to believe that we know what we're talking about. You know, and I've been around boardroom tables on many occasions where I felt I've had to go above and beyond to really demonstrate and prove my point and, you know, and argue my case, where I think probably sometimes men wouldn't necessarily have that same battle on their hands. So I think there's something around that. I think women probably know they're up for a fight, and so inevitably that just wears us down and we start to doubt ourselves. That said, I see it a lot with men, and I certainly see it a lot with men who have come from working class backgrounds, who haven't had the privilege of being able to go to university, or who have struggled in school but have huge potential in business, you know. And I see that a lot where men who have struggled academically, sometimes it's because they've had dyslexia and it's not been diagnosed, or sometimes it's just, you know, that environment of being in school and learning in the way that we learn in school hasn't worked for them. But strategically, they can think like, you know, they've got their ability to think strategically is genius. You know, my brother's an example of this. My brother really struggled in school, and he left with very little in the way of qualifications. but he is one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And, you know, he's set up his own business. He can make money like you wouldn't believe. And he thinks about things in a logical way that I just can't keep up with. And, you know, I went to university, I got masters. I can't even begin to keep up with his level of smarts, you know? So I think the way that society is structured around, you go to school, you go to university, you get these qualifications, then you've proved yourself. If people struggle with that journey, then inevitably they come into the workforce and you think, well, you know, actually, maybe I'm not good enough. And then the imposter syndrome creeps in. So sometimes I think it's probably about the self-confidence that some people have had the privilege of being able to accrue that self-confidence through their lives and other people haven't. So a lot of what I do with leaders and with potential and emerging leaders is really trying to show them how good they are, because, you know, the skills and the passion that I see in people could make, especially in my line of work, where I work with purpose-driven leaders, the potential that they have to make a difference in society and to make a better world, frankly, is huge. And it's wasted because of this niggling thing in the back of their mind that says that they're not the person to do this. And, you know, they could be making an enormous difference to people's lives, to the environment, and it's wasted potential. And it makes me really mad.
And it wasted potential for the individual, but also for the organization. So we talk about this as a problem from the individuals, but I think that organizations also need to be aware of it, because if they risk to overlook people that might have the capacity, the capabilities, the will and the drive to make the change, but they have this internal block. One thing that I remember is when I was hiring back in the days when I was a digital marketing tutor. So basically, there was a self-assessment, and HR will go through that, and they will send me the final, you know, the best performers, so that I will interview them. And I was shocked because I saw, and I was like, all men candidates. And I said to HR, how is that possible? Why do we didn't have any woman applying for this job? Didn't want to be anything, but, you know, you're surprised when you see the only people that comes through to the interview stage, they're all men. And they were like, HR replied, no, we had them, but their self-assessment is too low. They're not suitable for the job. Now, because I had the chance to work in gender equality in previous occasions, I stopped them. I say, okay, wait. I don't think that is the way. Can you give me at least a few? Let me see this, you know, self-assessment, and let me choose at least a few female candidates. And what turned up was that the female candidates, like if we were talking about, now this is technical, but if we're talking about SEO, for instance, they will rate themselves very low, because SEO, it is a very complicated matter. And so they generally believe that they didn't have that skill and knowledge that they was required to be a tutor on that subject. Their male counterpart, on the other end, they look at it and say, well, I don't know everything about it, but I know enough that I can get by. And when I started the interviews, it was incredible to see the gaps between like what they self-assessed and what they actually, their knowledge was and their abilities. And so we ended up taking a female and male. In the end, it was not. But if it wasn't that I had the chance to have worked on gender equality, understanding this, the company would have missed incredible talents, yeah. Missed incredible people that were absolutely perfect for the job, purely because they self-assess themselves on a lower level. So what I would like you to ask you is two fronts. What could an individual do? Just a few tips, obviously. This is a massive matter that needs someone like you to really to take them in a journey to get out, but at least to be aware of the problem. What are the first things that people can do as individuals? And a few tips also for the organizations to support people that might face these problems. So if you start for the individuals.
The individuals. So this isn't my tip. This is Michelle Obama's tip, actually. I have to not take credit for this, but she's like an idol of mine. She talks in her autobiography about this kind of experience that she has of, you know, in her younger days before she became the first lady, you know, feeling that kind of sense of imposter syndrome and feeling that she shouldn't be sitting around a boardroom table or, you know, having conversations with important people.
Yeah.
And then she got the opportunity to do it. And she said, like, let me tell you, they're not that smart. they're not, you know. So actually, I think, you know, for individuals, and I say this to individuals all the time, is you think you're not smart enough to be sitting around the table, look at who is sitting around the table and ask yourself if you're as smart or smarter than they are, because I pretty much guarantee that you're probably on the same level, if not far above what they are. So we have this idea that we're not good enough because other people are better. So I think if we can convince ourselves, or if we can realize, not convince ourselves, we can realize that those are the people that are making the decisions. You know, they're not all that. Let's be fair about it. They're not that smart. You know, they're doing the best with what they've got. You know, a lot of it comes from the confidence, the same confidence as those guys that applied for the jobs, you know, the SEO jobs, and said, well, I, you know, it's fine, I can probably do it, I'll wing it, you know.
Yeah.
That's exactly what people are doing when they're sitting around the boardroom table or they're running organizations. They don't know everything. They just act like they do. So, you know, I think for individuals, it's kind of actually, if you're going to compare yourself against people, then do it. Compare yourself against the actual people who are doing these jobs. And then really kind of really drill down into, you know, are they really that good? Because you're kind of, you're putting yourself in this comparative situation against this fictional character who you imagine is wonderful and all encompassing smart. And they're not the real people who are doing the things that you want to do and not that great, let's be honest. So that
I would love this. Sorry. I love this idea of the fictional character. It's true. We look at other people and imagine that they are so, they must be so good, so clever, so calm, so, you know, composed. And we create all of this image about them. And you're like, oh, I cannot, I never match. I will never be a match for them. And then actually, if you strip all the things that you put on that person, actually look at the person, it's probably as much as a person as you with all of their pitfalls and all of their strength and all of that.
Yeah, they're all human. They're all flawed. They're all human. And, you know, they just have the confidence to be sitting there. And, you know, I took some real comfort once from a friend of mine who I was at university with, and his dad was approaching retirement. And he was that kind of cliche white middle class, very affluent guy who had worked his way up the career ladder. And he was sitting at, you know, he was direct level, C-suite level, whatever, and whatever corporate world he was in, and he said, you know what, I'm nearly 65, and he said, I'm still terrified that somebody's going to find me out, that I don't know what I'm doing, you know. And I thought, wow, actually, so he's the guy that I'm comparing myself against. He's the guy that I think is this all, you know, all-knowing, you know, incredibly powerful, confident person, and he's not. He's winging it the same as everybody else is. So yeah, so the real people, remember that they're real people. That would be my tip for individuals. My tip for organizations, I guess, would be to look at it through the lens of risk. So again, to use the example that you've just given with the SEO and the kind of self-assessment applications. For me, you know, if I was appointing a group of people who claimed to know everything there was to know about SEO, I would be like, well, that's a bit concerning to me, because I think as soon as somebody says that they know everything or they're confident in what they're doing, then there's a big risk that they're going to get something very wrong. I think, you know, for me, like, one of the most important things in leadership, but in any role, is to admit that you don't know everything and that you're constantly learning. And as soon as you think you know everything, as soon as you stop learning, then you're in trouble. There's a problem at that point, because, you know, actually that's when you're most inclined to make a mistake. So I think for businesses, for organizations, you know, perhaps you need to kind of reconsider the way that you appoint people, and that you appoint people based on the fact that they say that they can do the job. Actually, you know, ask yourself the question, would they be able to do the job in the future if they were taught some skills, if they learned how to do it? Are they humble and modest enough to realize that they will need to continually learn and continually refresh their skills? And in that case, are the tools and methods that you use to recruit and in your HR processes, are they fit for purpose? Because if you're only asking yourself about people's confidence levels, you're just going to end up with a team of people who are overconfident and who probably are going to underdeliver. So yeah, those would be my two top tips.
I have three. Things I would like to talk. One, I love when you talk about admit you don't know something. And it's very important. Like teaching at university, there are times, which is one of the things I love the most of teaching, is when students ask you questions and you don't always have the answers. And I cannot stand when people make up answers, just because for me it's an opportunity, right? It's like if the students ask me something I don't know, I'll be like, I'll come back to you. I don't know it, but I'll come back, which forces me to learn something new. So that's, I never see teaching as a one-way direction because students teach as much. But I realized that in other contexts can be difficult to say, I don't know. For instance, when I was promoted and I was leaving that, talking back to that experience, I felt that I had to have all the answers. I was much younger. I think when you get older, you can start to be like, I don't know, I'll tell you. But at the time I was much younger and, you know, it was a huge promotion. And I felt inside that I have to know all the answer when my, you know, more junior people coming to me. And that is a problem. And how do you think we can go around to find that strength to say, I don't know? What is probably there is not a magic trick, but is there anything we can recommend to find that strength?
I think you need to find the right team and the right organization for you as well, because they're, you know, let's be honest, there are organizations who won't tolerate people saying, I don't know. And, you know, part of my experience when I was in my chief exec role was, you know, often it was my first chief exec role. I didn't know, you know, a lot of what I was doing, and I was figuring out as I was going along. I was asking for help and support, and it was fine. It was working. Everything was working really well. But there were a handful of people on the board who, well, I say a handful, there was two, probably one particular person on the board who targeted that and saw that as a kind of, as an admission of weakness, I guess. And so that caused a conflict, and for me, that conflict was just, you know, it was not reconcilable. So I think it's important to realize that actually, if you're in an organization where you say, I don't know, and then you're penalized somehow for that, then that's not the type of organization you want to be part of. That's not a progressive organization. And there are lots of organizations who recognize the power behind admitting that you don't know something. Because it's arrogant, isn't it, to think that you do know everything, or to say that you know everything, and it's dangerous to say that you know everything if you don't. So I would say, you know, don't be afraid to go somewhere else. Don't, you know, if you encounter resistance to you saying, I don't know, it's not you that's wrong. It's the culture of the organisation that's wrong. And if they're not willing to change the culture, go somewhere else. There's plenty of organisations who are learning organisations who are willing to grow and to nurture their individuals and to nurture their team. And recognize that by doing that, they're going to grow their own business. You know, that's, it makes good business sense to do that, to treat your people well, and to support their growth and development. So yeah, get out, I would say.
I agree. I fully agree. I think in part it might be imposed on yourself. So you think you need to know everything. And so if that is the case, go back to what we just said before, like look at the other people as humans and not fictional characters. They don't know all the answer. You don't know all the answer. It's actually an opportunity to grow. If the organization is the one that puts the limits, well, then, you know, change organization. I always say to my students, it's not a one-way direction. It's not that they decide everything for you. You can decide which organization you want to work for. And I understand it seems very blasé, because I can imagine a young person listening to us now and say, hey, I just found this job. It was so tough to find this job. I'm not going to quit for another one. But actually, as you progress in your career, you will see that there are opportunities, and, you know, don't stop at what you have just because, again, this fear, like we really need to let go a bit of the fear that holds us back and find the right fit for our values and what we want to do in life. And I think what you said before, as an organization, it makes business sense to have people that want to find out more. If you say, I don't know, of course, if someone says, I don't know, and walks away, well, that's a problem. But an individual that says, I don't know, let me find a solution, or can you help me find a solution, or can you help me find the resources to find a solution, then is a person that is going to grow and is going to push the company forward. So I think that is an incredible insight.
Yes. Yeah. I would say that the idea of pushing the company forwards is key to this. You know, organizations, all of the organizations that I support in my consulting business and my own businesses as well, they're all about growth, and they're all about developing their people and developing their team. Because, you know, if you retain staff, it's cheaper, it makes better sense for your business, you're going to be more profitable, and everybody's going to be happier, and you're at work for a big chunk of your life. You don't want to be somewhere where you're miserable. So, you know, there are a huge amount of organizations and an increasing amount of businesses who are, you know, who are very much putting their people first. I would definitely, you know, caveat, as you said, with the idea that saying I don't know and walking away is absolving yourself of responsibility. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about saying I don't know, but I will find out, and using it as a growth opportunity for yourself and for the business that you're working for. And, you know, for me, and I would hazard a guess that for all of the businesses that I support, that attitude would be the sort of attitude that they would want in their employees. And just to bounce back to what we were talking about a bit earlier about the kind of barriers that we face in the workplace as women, you know, I would say that some of the resistance that I encountered was probably because I was very young, at the point that I took on a chief exec role. And I think there was some people who were a little bit cross about that. You were a little bit like, who is this young upstart coming in? And so I think me saying I don't know was an opportunity for them to say, see, she's not up to the job, you know. So yeah. I think it was bigger than just kind of me having imposter syndrome. I think it was almost about a kind of resistance and a little bit of antagonism from some people. So yeah, and you know, it took me a long while to figure out that it wasn't the right place for me, and I left, and it was fine. Everything was fine. The world didn't end. So you know, for any young people watching this who are a little bit worried about moving to a different business, there's lots of businesses out there. There are lots of jobs out there. You don't need to jump ship straight away. You can bide your time and find the right fit for you, but you don't have to stay.
That's so important message, because sometimes you feel caged in a job. And that is the worst. And you said another thing, very important. Now we are a little bit deviating, but I think it's very important, especially for young people, young women starting their career, is that you spend a lot of time at work, and you need to realize that you better make something that you like out of your life at work, because it's going to be the biggest chunk of your day is going to be spent there. And if you are not happy, that trickles into also the time you're not spending at work. Because all of a sudden you think about it all the time, and it becomes this circle, which brings me to at which point do you think someone should start looking for help if they feel that they have this imposter syndrome? Or because one thing, if it's the barrier is external, as we say, okay, we walk away and that's fine. But if this imposter syndrome really affects us, and not only we don't get a promotion, but there are a lot of other, you know, effects, like if you already were not confident to start with, really is a crush on your confidence and everything. At which point do you think someone should start to look for help, and where they should go to look for help, internally, externally, or?
Yeah, I would say, many years ago, I used to work in a solicitor's firm, and we used to see a lot of young graduates, law graduates who had come through, they followed that path of, I guess mum and dad had said, go into law, it's a good career or whatever. So they'd gone and got their law degree, and they were looking for training contracts, and they were coming through, and they were just, you know, there were numbers in this solicitor firm. There were huge volumes of them coming through. And every now and again, I'd see someone completely crack up. And so I would find like case files hidden down the back of a radiator because somebody had just gone, I can't cope with this anymore. Or somebody burnt their files.
Wow.
You know, like really extreme. They just lost it. And so I would say, there is a massive risk that if you don't address this, and you're the only person who can address this, you're responsible for yourself and for your own well-being. You know, it's dangerous if you don't address it. It's dangerous to your own mental health and well-being. And the business is not going to change to accommodate you unless you've got a really progressive business where you have a huge amount of influence. So you really have to ask yourself whether you're on the right path. And there's no shame in not being on the right path. It's not never too late to say, actually, you know, law's not for me, or this particular career is not for me. You know, it's not, the past isn't wasted. The experience that you've got isn't wasted. You just take that in a new direction. So I would say my advice would be, as soon as you start to get that niggling doubt where you think, oh, I'm not feeling happy about getting out of bed in the morning and going to work. If you start to get those butterflies in your stomach where you just think, oh God, it's that Sunday night dread, or, you know, I just don't want to do this, then speak to somebody. And, you know, if you've got somebody internally, if you've got a supervisor or a team leader or something who's supportive and encouraging, then by all means speak to them. But actually there's a huge amount of people that you can speak to outside of your organization. And that could be like a coach or a mentor or somebody who you trust, who doesn't necessarily have to be in the same role, but someone who's got, you know, more experience or who's been in the workforce for a bit longer. Just go to somebody who you trust and be honest about how you're feeling, because the path that you've chosen, we're not in that day and age anymore where you pick a job and a career and you stick to it for life. That's gone. We don't have to do that anymore. We can do, you know, we can move and we can go and do something else, and we can take the skills that we've learned and we can apply it to a new direction. So as stuck as you might feel in the moment, you're not stuck. You can move forward and get out. But the further down that line you go, where you get to the point where you're hiding your case files down the back of the radiator, at that point it becomes much harder to think clearly. And at that point it becomes much harder to get out because you just can't think with your rational brain. And so if you leave it to the point where it gets to that stage, you can still get out, and you can absolutely still get out. It'll just feel like a much bigger challenge and a much bigger upheaval for you. So speak to somebody as soon as you start to get that feeling of, oh, I really don't want to go to work today. You know, I feel anxious about it. Just have a chat with somebody that you trust. It doesn't have to be somebody you pay to speak to. You can speak to, you know, speak to someone who's in the workforce, who's been around for, you know, 10 or 20 years, who knows that, you know, who knows how it works. And just be honest and have a chat with them.
That's absolutely right. And one thing that brings me to think about, I always recommend my students to try to find mentors. They don't need to be necessarily, you know, someone you pay or something. I personally have my own mentors, mm-hmm. and I mentor younger people, or, you know, because I think is apart from what I'm a firm believer that knowledge is something we need to share. There's no point in having knowledge. Oh, I have 18 years of work experience. Let's keep it all for me. As, you know, all everything we learn is good to share. And I know that I'm learning a lot from my mentors. It's incredible. So I think having a mentor that you can go to when you start feeling that strange sensation. And if you are a leader, like you work with leaders, so emerging leaders, is that something you address straight away? You try to find out if they have this on the back of their mind, they share with you straight away? Because one thing is starting the career, one thing is being an emerging leader, moving up. And
I mean, I guess you use the same methods in marketing and brand strategy, but I always have the, like, why are you doing this? Start with why. What's your motivation?
Exactly.
What's your North Star? Why are you here? Like, why do you want to be a leader? Because it's, you know, it's hard work. It's tough. It's lonely, and you have to really feel that you've got something to give, and you have to really want to do it, because if you don't want to do it, then it's exhausting. So start with why. I really kind of interrogate an individual strategic objective. So I kind of go through the same kind of process as I would with a business, where we would be creating a strategy. But I'd do it for that individual. Like, what's your motivation? Where do you want to be in 20 years? Will doing this help you to get there? Or is this a thing about, you know, showing your parents that you're successful? Or is this something to do with kind of your own emotional stuff that you need to work through? Because, you know, if your commitment is to doing this because you want to be impressive, or you want to show other people, they're not the people that have to get out of bed every morning and go and do this. You have to do it.
Exactly.
So you have to really understand what your motivation is. Start, like Simon Sinek says, start with why. Figure out where you want to be in 20 years' time, where you want to be in 5 years' time, and then what steps are you going to take to get there? And I think that kind of methodology allows us to be really ruthless about the decisions that we make as well. Because if you're looking at something that looks like a great opportunity, but doesn't support your personal goals, your personal objectives, you can quite easily then say, actually, yeah, it's great, but it's not for me. It's not the right thing for me. And it gives you kind of, almost gives you the power and the permission to say no to stuff. So yeah, really understanding motivation is important, because it helps you kind of really dictate your journey and your road back to getting to where you want to go. And also to kind of realizing when, you know, when perhaps your pride is influencing your decision-making.
I love you mentioned it all starts with why, because exactly what you said, we use also in branding the same exact you know, sentence. Which brings me to the very last question, because time is ticking. Talking about branding, the question I ask to everyone, can you tell me a brand that you like and why?
I mean, I work a lot with social enterprises. So I'm going to go for a social enterprise or a purpose-driven organization. I love Patagonia, the outdoor brand, because I think I like them because they're subtle in their advertising. They don't shout about what they do. They just do it. You know, the proof is in the pudding with what they do, you know.
Yeah.
And they they talk, they walk the walk. So, you know, it's not about big, bold statements about how many trees they've planted or, you know, how many, I don't know, women they've employed or some tokenistic kind of purpose-driven marketing ploy. It's actually, this is what we do. We're a social enterprise, but we don't really shout about it. We just think that this is the right way to do business. And everything speaks to their ethos of being ethical and being all about kind of sustainability in the outdoors and getting out there and being at one with nature, with your mental health as well as your physical health. And yeah, God, I wish more businesses would operate in a way where they just, you know, they just get on with it. It's not a big marketing campaign. It's not a big kind of, you know, it's not a status thing. It's not about shouting about kind of meaningless statistics. It's just about being an ethical, purpose-driven business and doing it really well.
It's very interesting because I asked this question to another speaker, guest, and she said she works in social enterprises and she said that their favorite brand is Patagonia for exactly the same reason. And I think that proves that Patagonia really is getting it right. People that have, you know, that care about the environment and the social issues, they recognize Patagonia as a leader in the field. And I think that just proves that can be done. Patagonia is a super successful organization. Certainly not someone, they are not struggling financially or from market share or anything. And yet what they put at the center is really their commitment and their purpose. So I'm so glad that you mentioned it because it really goes to show that when there is a purpose that is really real and a purpose that everybody agrees upon within the organization, then you can go ahead with that and you don't have to just think about, I'm going to make more money. But it's really about, you know, grow as an organization while also having a positive impact. So thank you so much for this. And thank you for the incredible insight on the imposter syndrome. I will put in the notes all of your links. So if anybody that is listening is struggling with that, or especially if they are growing in their career and they're moving up and they need that extra help, that I recommend everybody to have, because I've been there. I wish I had someone like you when I was growing. Well, thank you so much, Fran. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, Julia. It's been great. Thank you.
And stop.